Okay, guys. We're doing this series in November because the series is called the Overload Series because, you know, there are times in our lives where we just think there's too much and we get overloaded. And so the first one that we did was on stress. And that was about, 3 weeks ago. And then the second one we did was on media overload. Who was here last Sunday for that Wilson and his team? Very ably, I hear. Is that right? So that was last weekend. Today we do the hurry sickness, hurry and fatigue. How many are tired this morning? That's why it's great being up here. So hurry and fatigue. And then next Sunday morning, teacher Glenn is going to take us through. He's one of our teachers here. Glenn is going to take us through. What's your one, Glenn? Work. Oh, that's right. Work overload. So that's this month. It's a good series. So my topic this morning is in the area of hurry and fatigue. So at this point, I'd like to slow right down and talk to Jesus. Could we do that? Jesus, yet again, we come to you this morning. We will always come to you. I mean, who's not to want to come to you? You are fantastic. You are so good to come to. And we come to you, Lord, because we need to hear your spirit in our spirits. But not only that, Lord, we would invite you to do things this morning. Do what only you can do in our lives. So we ask to hear, but we also ask you to do. In your wonderful, wonderful name, amen. Okay. Friends, I have a question. What is the very first thing that you do when you wake up in the morning? Now, let me put this in context. When you wake up in the morning, I'm talking about the very first thing, do you pull the curtains? No. When you wake up in the morning, do some of you, the very first thing that you do, lean over and snuggle up to your partner or your pillow? Okay, we'll just leave that one there. When the first thing that you do when you wake up in the morning, do you leap out of bed and do 10 push-ups to get the blood pumping into your system? No. I tend to think there is one thing that all of us do, the very first thing when we wake up, is to what? Oh, come on, what is the very first thing that we do when we wake up? The very first thing that we do is look at the clock. Is that right? Now, the very first thing most people do when they wake up is look at the clock. And if we are early, we've woken up early, we try and roll over and catch a bit more sleep, yes? If we are late, we make a beeline for the bathroom. Is that right? Okay. Is that right? Okay. The point being, it seems to me that the very first thing that we do when we wake up is we look at the clock. And the clock calls the shots. Yes? The clock. And as we go through the whole day, we race. Yes? From one person to another, one meeting to another, one activity to another, one appointment to another. We are scurrying and we are hurrying. Is that right? And then it seems as though every moment in our day is formed into a schedule, and the clock, it is ticking. Yes?
tick, tock, tick, tock. We hear the clock. We look at the clock. And the clock determines how we live our lives. And the clock, the ticking of the clock, it keeps a track on our progress. And the clock, it urges us not to fall behind. Is this right? The clock. And because of this, we hurry and race through life. How many feel, actually, presently, in November, that kind of most of your year has been a bit like a hurry? How many have had the hurry sickness this year? Show of hands. Yeah, I think a lot of us have. Running here, there, scurrying, racing, fast-paced. Now, if you hear nurses, have you often listened to nurses? My wife used to be a nurse. You listen to nurses and they often say, oh, I'm just so tired. I mean, they're racing through life. What about doctors? Listen to doctors, they often say, I am on the edge. You know, they're just so tired. Is that right, Lisa? And they just sort of say, oh, I'm just sort of on the edge. What about young mums? How many young mums have we got in the room? I mean, young mums are forever what? Tired. Is that right, Joe? Forever tired. You know, I have often, I mean, I take my hat off to young mums. If I had to come up with a picture to describe young mums, do you know what it would be? Now, this is not a criticism. This is an observation of young mums. Have you ever been in a car and you're driving down a road and it's just raining cats and dogs outside? I mean, there's a bucket load of water. It's just coming down. And so you put on the windscreen wipers, but they're defective. Have you ever had that? And so you've got these lousy windscreen wipers and the rain is pouring down and it's like you're in the car and everything is a blur. I think that best describes young mums. I mean, it's not a criticism, but can you relate to it, young mums? It's like everything is a blur. Because you're racing, I came across this description of a young mum. Listen to this. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I had report cards for my junior English class, and they were due at 8. This is a young mum. I still had 40 stories to evaluate in order to complete the grades. My own young children were sleeping, but soon they'd be awake and they would need me. Why didn't I start sooner? I screamed at myself. But I had started sooner. I'd begun about a week ago, only to be distracted by this, that, and everything else. I mean, I am a good teacher. I love working with kids, and I've always got a million creative ways of getting my lessons across. But everything seems like a blur. For example, just the other day, I put the carrots on the stove and turn it on high so they'd cook quicker. And while the carrots are cooking, I start to bake a cake. Then I decide it's time to call a friend about getting together the next day. I forget about the food and I get involved in the conversation. Then our cat would start meowing at me. So I begin to feed the cat. The phone cord still dangling from my ear. Then I hear the smoke alarm. And now I'm wondering, why is the smoke alarm going off? I think that's a great description of young mums. Is that right? Always juggling so many things. I mean, I take my hat off to them, young mums. But the hurry, the hurry, the hurry. What about churches? Do you know one of the reasons why people out there, one of the reasons why they don't want to come to a church? One of the reasons? It's got nothing to do with Jesus. They're scared to come to church. Do you know why they're scared to come to church? Because they think that if they join a church, a group like this, that we will dump another layer of busyness on their lives. And they already feel way too busy. And they're scared that, you know, churches will just dump this meeting, that meeting, every other meeting, activity, person into their already busy lives. And so, I mean, I heard this story of a 50-year-old, and she's a lawyer, able, qualified, and she went to have an appointment with her own pastor. And the pastor said to this 50-year-old woman, he said, "So how are you?" And straight away she blurted out, "I hate this church." And of course, he's thinking, "Whoa, back the truck up." So he said, "Where did that come from?" And she said, "I hate this church because this church stole my father from me." And he said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, this church just dumped a whole lot of busyness into his already busy life. And I never really got to see my dad when I was growing up. So I'm angry with this church, and I'm angry for him too, for letting it happen." So sometimes, you know, churches can be places of always hurrying and fatigue. Am I right? What about people in my position? Do you know, I heard of the story of a guy, a pastor, and he was doing what I'm doing right now. And he was halfway through his message. Actually, I've done this. He was halfway through his message, and he suddenly stopped, and he said, "I can't go on. I can't go on." He was only 10 minutes in, and he said, "I can't go on." And so he stepped down off the platform. Later that week, he started to experience difficulty sleeping, and then a tingly sensation started to creep into his hands and parts of his body. Is that right, Lisa? A sort of a tingling sensation. And then after a while, he found it really difficult to breathe. And then he'd have these panic attacks. And then his heart would just start beating really faster. And it was all because he was just hurrying too fast through life. So that's our topic this morning. Hurrying and the fatigue that comes from it. Now here's the thing, people. Sometimes we hurry because of our personality type. And I have a question for you. I mean, do you find your personality is the kind of personality that just drives you into the fast lane? Is that right? So there are two personality types. Have you done this work? There is a type A personality and a type B personality. How many here think that they're type B? How many think that they're type A? How many don't know? Well, here we go. So Fiona, could we have the first... here we go, people. Now, I'm going to read this out for the sake of the people who listened to this, and there are thousands of them on podcast. Here we go. Type A. "I feel as though there isn't enough time each day to do all the things I need to do. I tend to speak faster than other people, finishing their sentences. My spouse or friends say or believe that I eat too quickly. I tend to get very upset whenever I lose a game. I'm very competitive in work, sports, or games. I tend to be bossy and dominate others. I prefer to lead rather than follow. I feel pressed for time. Even when I am not doing something important, I feel impatient when I have to wait. I tend to make decisions quickly, even impulsively. I regularly take on more than I can accomplish. I become irritable, even angry, more often than most other people." That is type A. We're going to do a vote soon. Type B. "I do not get irritated or angry easily. I am so laid back and relaxed. I am patient and self-controlled. I am not obsessively competitive. I plan things in advance before executing them. Rarely do I complain. I comfortably adapt to situation and changes. I do not mind waiting in line or waiting to get work done. I'm a fun-loving, relaxed, and I love to socialize. I have controlled eating habits and lifestyles. I do not have any obsessive-compulsive habits." Tell the person next to you which one you are on a bad hair day. You want to be B. Tell the person next to you which one of this is kind of lines up in your life. Okay, guys. How many type A personality types are there in the room? Show of hands, not half hands, full hands, please. Be proud. How many type Bs? Okay. Would you agree with me, friends? Would you agree that actually our world, there's an incredible amount of pressure on us to be type A? Is that right? Would you agree with me that if you are a type B person, you know, you just are laid back, you're relaxed, there is this kind of impression out there that you could therefore be lazy. You don't really care. You know, the mark of a good worker, the mark of a good partner in marriage, the mark of a, is someone who has, you know, a whole lot of things to do and sort of races from one thing to another. I think, actually, there's a lot of pressure to be type A. Now, I am not this morning trying to make a war on speed. I mean, I love speed. I mean, I love emails. Some of you know this. I mean, that's fast communication. I love it. I'm so glad that we've got beyond faxes. I mean, that was quite fast. But emails are great. Last weekend, Ruby and I were speaking in Dunedin, a Presbyterian gathering. I love jumping on a plane. We were down there within 2 hours. I mean, I love speed. But you see, here's the thing this morning. What we can love speed, but there's a little fine line, and we cross this little fine line, and we get addicted to speed. And we end up a certain type of person. And that's what I'm concerned about. How do you know when you've crossed the line and you've become addicted to speed? I wonder if you could have the second slide up, Fiona. Let's look at this. I'm going to read it out for the sake of those who do a podcast. Here it goes. I lose my sense of humor for more than a day. How many have been guilty of that? I have. Ruby could testify to that. Second one, I put limits on the time I spend with significant other people in my life. My children would say I've done that many times, too often. Number three, I feel resentful towards others about all I have to do. Anybody else other than me? Number four, when I hear others ask, why do I look so sad? Some of you have asked me that. Number five, I rush my listening and speaking in conversations. Glenn does that. No. Number six, I feel inflexible about my schedule. Anyone else been guilty on this one? Number seven, I get annoyed by surprises. Anyone else? Hey, come on. Yeah, thank you for the nods. These are signs of those that have crossed a little fine line. So my last point this morning is this. So what can help us? How can we get a cure for the hurry sickness and the fatigue in our lives? Could you come with me to a brilliant passage, and I've only recently discovered this, in Mark chapter 4. Okay? Mark 4. Mark 4. So Mark 4 and verse 35. And it says this. Have we got it? It says, that day when evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, let's go over to the other side. So leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. And there were also other boats with him. A furious storm came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. And Jesus was in the back of the boat, sleeping on a cushion. And the disciples woke him and said to him, teacher, teacher, don't you care if we drown? And Jesus got up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, quiet, be still. And then the wind died down and it was completely calm. And he said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? And they were terrified. And they asked each other, who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. You know, most teachers, when they come to this passage, do you know what they talk about in this passage? Tell me, what do they mostly often talk about from this passage? Help me out here. What do most teachers, when they speak from this passage, what do they often draw attention to? Yeah, they draw attention to the divinity of Jesus, that he was God on earth and as such could command nature, the waves and the wind, to be still, and they became calm. And they often use that part of the story. The part of the story that I want to draw attention is to his humanity. Where was Jesus during the storm? He was in the back of the boat. I love it. The back of the boat. And by the way, this storm was bad. Do you remember the Wahine disaster that we had in New Zealand? I mean, that's the kind of storm we're talking about here. Many a boat was absolutely capsized in this stretch of water. And many a sailor lost their lives. This is a serious storm-ridden part of the planet. Okay? So of course, understandably, the disciples were really, really afraid. But where was Jesus in the storm? He's in the back of the boat. And what was he doing? He was here. I've got one here. What was Jesus doing? What does it say? He was lying on a cushion. And what was he doing? Sleeping. Now, in that, there is something for you and for me in terms of our hurry, sickness, and fatigue. But you kind of think, oh, so Mick, are you just saying we need more sleep? No, that is not the point of the story here. Oh, some of you are nodding, yes, you do need more sleep. But no, actually, that is not actually the point of the story. Sometimes when you get a story like this, people, you need to, see, the word I want to concentrate on is sleep. Sometimes you need to look around this particular passage and see if the word sleep occurs near this passage. And it does. So if you come to some verses before this passage, we bump into again the word sleep. So come with me to verse 26. Okay, chapter 4, what does it say? He also said, so this is prior to the storm, this is what the kingdom of God is like. A man scatters seed on the ground, and night and day, whether he what? Whether he sleeps or gets up, the seed sprouts and grows, though he does not know how. Here's my point. Now you've got to lock eyes, people. This is deep. This is deep. Lock eyes. Come with me. Come to me. It goes like this. It goes like this. The seed goes into the ground, and you may be asleep. And even while you're sleeping, God is at work. That's what this passage is saying. In other words, people, you've got to hear this. Not everything in life depends upon just you. So stop running around as though it does. There is a place for going to the back of the boat and finding a cushion and going to sleep, even in the middle of a storm, knowing that even while you're asleep, God is at work. And He can do much while you're lying down. Did you get that? So friends, I mean, you take, for example, your families. Some of you here may be in the storm of thinking you're a lousy husband, or a lousy wife, or a lousy mother, or a lousy father. And what the message this morning is this. Go to the back of the boat. Find a cushion. And have a sleep. Not everything depends upon you. So don't run around as though it does. I mean, some of you here, you may have serious addiction issues. You may be doing stuff with substances, doing stuff with screens. We may be doing stuff with other people. We may be just habitually, compulsively addicted to something. And we know that it's causing a measure of harm, not just to us, but to our relationship with God and our relationship with others. And you're running around desperately trying and trying harder. And the message this morning is, go to the back of the boat. Find a cushion. Lie down. Because it doesn't all just depend upon you. So don't run around as though it does. It's a brilliant message. I mean, you think of our places of work. You might be in the middle of a storm at work. You've got a lousy boss. Or there's someone on your team and you know there's negative chemistry. Go to the back of the boat. Find a cushion. Lie down. Because it doesn't all just depend upon you. So stop running around as though it does. While you are still, God is at work. Did you get that? You know, there's a person, and I'll finish with this. He was just starting out in life, just this young 20-year-old, and he wanted some wisdom. This is true. So he went to this professor of philosophy, this Christian guy by the name of Dallas Willard. And this young guy, he went to Dallas Willard and he said, "Look, I'm just about to start out and I want all the wisdom that I can get. Could you give me some advice?" And this professor looked him in the eyes and said, "Ruthlessly eliminate all hurry from your life." And this young guy thought, "You mean that's it? That's all you're going to say to me? Isn't there more?" And the professor said again, "Ruthlessly eliminate all hurry from your life." And do you know what he thought he should do at that point? "Oh, do you mean I just need to scrub things off my list, not have so many things on my list?" No, that is not how you will ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. How do you do it?
You go to the back of the boat. You find a cushion. And you lie down. And you go to sleep knowing that it doesn't all just depend upon you. So you don't have to run around as though it does. That while you're resting, God is at work. Did you get that? If you have that in your heart of hearts, it has a ripple effect and it touches so much else in your life and you become a different type of person. When you deep down know that it doesn't all just depend upon you. Do you know what I've noticed since being in South Auckland? There is a staunch independence in South Auckland. It's not a criticism. It's an observation. And South Aucklanders have this thing of, basically it all depends upon me. They do, don't they? Whereas what Scripture says is it doesn't all depend upon you. So stop running around as though it does. You can lean into God. You can be still, find a cushion, back of the boat. And while you're sleeping, God is at work. It's true. So I have a cushion here. Does some of you need to come and put your hand on the cushion? I mean, is there stuff in your workplace, and you know you're hurrying, running, stuff in your personal life, and it's time to stop trying harder and let God do some work, even while you rest. I've had to learn that with this church. It's not about me running around, working harder, trying harder. Doesn't all just depend upon me? So I've had to put my hand on the cushion. I refuse to run around here as though it all depends upon me. God is at work. So if this is a message to you this morning, I'm going to ask you to come to the front and put your hand on the cushion. You can come and start to come now. Just start to come out of your seats and just place your hand on the cushion. Doesn't all just depend upon you? God is at work. I wonder if Cam and the team could, we'll just do one song, Be Still. Yeah, once you've placed your hands there, if you could move away so others can, that'd be great. So while we sing this last song, let's all stand. But you make your way to the front. If you need to be in the back of the boat. Yeah.